Welcome to Syntropic World. I hope to take you on an adventure of possibility about a world that is syntropic, where all we do as humans in universe leaves everything better. Thank you to my wonderful guests, people I admire, people who make me better. Special thanks to Foundation Nova Diem for producing this series. If you are a social enterprise seeking an avenue for digital storytelling, I cannot recommend Nova Diem enough. Now let's get started. Thank you for listening. Well, today I am very excited to have the wonderful DJ Carey present for this final of the four-part podcast series. And I got to know DJ through him joining the Syntropic Enterprise Masterclass a couple of years ago now. You can read all about his bio. I like to make this more a personal thing, which is I've experienced DJ as somebody who has incredible experience at working with people, particularly in the creative field, but also very committed to the type of work that we're animating in Syntropic World, enterprises that really are a stand for a world with a future for Earth and all her creatures and so on. DJ has become a friend. He's also part of the advisory team of Syntropic World, which I'm very honored to have him as part of that. When I'm around DJ, I'm a better person, and I really appreciate that you have said yes to joining us on this final episode. Welcome, DJ.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here, and I don't feel like I deserve those wonderful sentiments, but I'll certainly take them. I feel like the journey that we've been on over the last couple of years is now reaching that kind of that point of exponential arising, which kind of does speak to that transition from entropic to syntropic. So I'm happy to carry on a conversation around this, as the fourth part of this series.
Yeah, thanks, DJ. So this final episode 4, the future is syntropic. And one of the things that you're working on, which is I find incredibly fascinating, is it sort of sits around how do we create the scaffolding for a syntropic life? So first of all, just, why does this matter to you? Why is it important that we really look at, first of all, from the individual sort of human point of view, how we as individuals and humans really step into our lives as a syntropic life, but also really understanding the full diverse capacity of who we are as humans?
It's a bit of a loaded question to start. I love it. I think probably the key driver here is that we've burned fast and hot as a species over the last 150 years. And I think we've discovered a lot over the 20th century, and we're really starting to collate and catalyze things in the 21st. I think about the work that you're doing and how we move from, entropy to syntropy. And quite frankly, I think we have a responsibility that we as a species need to take and take seriously in every industry across all facets of operations and infrastructures and governmental bodies and, teams and groups and communities to start behaving in a way that is respectful both of ourselves and our communities, but also of the planet and the path of either destruction or construction that we leave behind in the work that we do. That's what drove me to Syntropic World and how we met. But I think the key point here is that we're in a really pivotal time. These next couple of decades are really going to likely be the determinative factor as to whether or not we thrive and integrate and synergize with the planet and with ourselves as a species and figure out how we can move forward beyond that, or we set ourselves up for detrimental challenges or even potential extinction. So it's a critical point. And to me, that seems like a fairly large enough reason to be compelled to make some changes.
Yeah. Yes. And I notice that you've been working on a project that it sort of is going to inform a piece of this. Do you want to speak a little bit about that and give us sort of a little bit of contour to what you've been working on?
I would absolutely love to. Okay, so little bit of backstory. I have 20 plus years in marketing, split between New York, agency kind of work and San Francisco based big tech, things like that. I got to cut my teeth on, you know, coming from a creative background, but really being a technologist at heart and using those two to solve problems. And what really came together over the last 10 years as I've been in on the West Coast and working with big tech companies is that there's a third factor. It's the liminal space between creativity and innovation and technology and opportunity. That is how we process information and how we build systems and frameworks that allow us to leverage both the right brain and the left brain, as it were, to bring in, leverage, and ultimately utilize as much of the data and the insights and the knowledge that we've both captured in the past and are working through in the present in a way that is most effective to the work that we do, but also as efficient and antiseptic to creating freedom for us as individuals to be at our best to the largest extent that we can as consistently as possible. And so what I've been working on over the last couple of years that I'm looking to launch is a version of kind of a life operating system where it takes it lives on a platform called Notion. It's in, you know, up in the cloud. It is database oriented, so there's a lot of tech data info stacking and interconnectivity. But really, what it's meant to do is take all of the different roles and relationships and responsibilities that you have in your life, and provide some level of representation in a way that rather than having frameworks that say help you, you know, get better and not get fired in your job or cultivate your backyard garden as a passion, interconnect those systems so that you can have a clear view of each of those pieces, but also an understanding of what the data tells you in terms of the overall experience of your life. So I would say I would represent myself a number of different ways. I would have different identities, DJ as a person, DJ as a brand, which I would consider to be a team or organization, the company Future Theory that I started that is the backbone of what I'm launching, and then other specific relationships, say with Centropic World, with you. And each of those would have their own lanes. And within those lanes, we would look at things from research and development to strategy to, you know, taking action on progress and projects and processes to aligning with and achieving goals and ultimately analyzing and monitoring that so that we can learn from what we've done and optimize and realign for how we move forward. That model works for everything from how you manage your day to day in your life with, you and, you know, your loved ones and kids and pets and all that kind of stuff to how you integrate or run a large organization. And so what this system is built to do is to provide the straightforward measurements, actions, and insights for all those different facets so you can focus your energy without getting distracted on each individual piece when you're in the zone, but also understand where are you falling short? Where are you excelling? Where are things really exciting for you? What are the things that you want to phase out in your life? And really get a clear picture of ultimately, how can you be the most effective and impactful human in a way that both benefits you and hopefully benefits a world that is growth oriented and constructive and centropic?
Right. It sounds incredibly complex. And I know that that's a lot of when I work with Centropic, people say that sounds complex too. So it sounds complex. So tell me, can you give me a kind of an example, a future, you know, if we're stepping into the future and this is, and this platform that you're building is really supporting, can you give a sort of like on the ground example of fluency that it will enable people to do? I don't know whether that's a sensible question.
I think it is. Either way, let's make sense of it.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Thinking about, let's split the role that someone has, an individual with their own aspirations, a relationship, a partnership with another human being that they love and care for, and their responsibility as, say, a team member in an organization. To be able to look at that in that first layer, what you're most interested in, where you're spending your time, what kind of things that you allocate to that time that you have, assuming you're going to be working full time in those mornings or in those evenings where you do have a little time to think, or where you have those moments of epiphany when you're, you know, say out with your loved one and all of a sudden you realize something that you want to fold back into how you operate, to be able to capture those and leverage those and have a running kind of like a digital journal that's capturing more than just your thoughts that you would write down on paper or type into a computer, capturing the actions and behaviors that you have, the likes and dislikes, you know, thinking about the vision that you have for your future in 5, 10, 15, 20, 50 years. And as you go about your day to day, it's less about putting your effort into how you meticulously track those details, because you can get lost in the minutia that way, but building a running tally of these key markers in your day-to-day life that give you an insight enough to say, oh, you know what? I still have the same vision, but I don't feel like I'm charting toward it effectively, or I'm missing the mark, or I'm not moving fast or slow enough to actually effectively make use of this. From a partnership standpoint or a team-based standpoint, you know, my wife and I have lots of dreams and plans, and you know, we're both in the throes of the middle of our career, and we kind of left the marketing space, she left the legal space, and now we're thinking about where do we want to go next. And having acquired a fair amount of knowledge and built a decent enough network, those opportunities that aren't typically instantly available when you start your career are fodder for thought and conversation. Yeah. And we talk about that amongst plenty of other things in terms of where we are with our lives. And those conversations often spark opportunities to try new things. And so she and I would work in a similar space where the information and the conversations would turn into new aspirations and new projects that we would work toward. And then we can partner up. And I've managed small teams and large global teams. And once you get over that threshold of, you know, say 30, 40, 50 people, you get into the hundreds and the multi-hundreds and the thousands of people, you tend to end up stacking management hierarchy in order to make sure that you distribute responsibility and ultimately give your team members the opportunity to feedback up, which leads into the third part, which is from an organizational standpoint. The more, just like in real life, the more people you have in a conversation, as long as it's not, you know, either highly charged or incredibly controversial or on a death spiral to, you know, to oblivion, everybody's going to have some vested interest. Everybody's going to have some level of talent and skill to bring to the table. And everybody is going to naturally find some connectivity between the other people. And, you know, I think one of the very few benefits that came out of COVID is we've figured out how to hone our skills in the digital realm to derive those connective tissues through this digital ether that we had been forced to over the last handful of years build and maintain relationships through. And what this system will also hopefully do is to allow for not only a hierarchy, but a flat, clear understanding of level of contribution, you know, growth opportunities, and ultimately be clear on, from a Centropic standpoint, what the ultimate goals are, the things that align with the framework of, you know, constructing and growing and building abundance in your organization, but also maintaining clear lines of communications and standard communications and operating processes and open forums. And, you know, I think one of the greatest things that came out of the blockchain roller coaster in the last couple of years is the concept of a DAO, where rather than having a handful of people at the top with tons and tons of power that are disseminating all of the instruction and direction to very, very little benefit to a large distributed mass of people, there are ways that now we can structure large groups that can, where everybody can have a voice, and we can democratize the direction of the organism, which is the team or the community or the organization. And so going from the individual to a binaural unit or a team all the way up to large organizations, each and every one of those presents extra layers, but those layers can then help facilitate more empowerment, more feedback, and we can use the data within the system and the feedback from the human beings that are actually participating in that system to figure out how to course correct, hopefully more effectively, based on that human feedback in a system that maintains it.
Right. And just to be clear, a DAO, if anyone doesn't know, a decentralized autonomous organization, it sounds like what you're creating, if I could describe it, is something along the lines of a digital mirror. And when I use the term mirror, because one of nature's coordinate systems is the law of interference, which is how we see. It's light, how we see. And so we need that in order for us to both see others, but also have our reflection back. And that gorgeous learning opportunity that happens when we get to see ourselves reflected back and also see nuance and see connections and possibilities, that if we're only looking from the inside of ourselves and not creating that objective point of view, it is very easy to miss. It's one of the reasons why having a great team of people around you that holds your highest intention in their heart and reflects back aberrant or immature behavior is really critical to any form of human development. But it sounds to me like it's some form of digital personal library that has a mirroring effect, maybe. It's a digital whole person library that has a mirroring effect, a mirroring and interconnectivity effect. Would that be a way that you might describe it?
I think there are kind of two things that have inspired me in terms of thinking about how to build this, and it came from humble beginnings of, you know, the marketing world and trying to figure out how to be a better project manager. But then there were all of these philosophical and spiritual elements that brought it back to the potential from a human standpoint. And I think that goes to what you're talking about. One is a holon, which is, you know, something that is both a representative individual object, but is also connected to and part of everything else that's around it. And the other, which is kind of where I'm going with this, is the concept of Indra's net. It's in Chinese Buddhism and a number of other places. And the distilled down concept is there are all of these jewels, and each of these jewels are a mirror reflection. And so they represent something singular and unique, but because they reflect all the other jewels in this large three-dimensional grid of the jewels, they are also inherently representative of everything else in that space. And it really does get to the point of, you know, how we can very easily get lost in our own, you know, building our own walls and boundaries that are artificial to, you know, create a sense of self and, you know, validate who we are in our own circumstances, and then relate ourselves to the next point, as opposed to recognizing that we are basically all part of the same philosophical soup. And the form that we take doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, physical form. It's, you know, how we think about the connections that we have with each other and how we recognize and take advantage of the fluidity in which we all connect as human beings. And I think that opens the door to opportunity, and that opportunity, if we can energize that enough to make that as vibrant and observable and valid for as many people as possible, that becomes a very exciting thing, because then you that creates that rising tide that lifts all boats. And I think that could be a very powerful source of inspiration that then a system like this could potentially leverage.
Yeah. You have, the whole area of tech, because in this fourth episode, the future is entropic and we are in a technological world. And one of the arguments that I've had as a not raised in the tech sort of space like you have been, I've been following and interested in blockchain from the very beginning and those type of things. But quite often I see people reach into the grab bag of tech as a solution to a problem without actually understanding the problem itself. So, for example, in the crypto space, I call it the wild, wild west, because it has elements of gold rush mind era. And so many people, they're not necessarily bad people and they're not necessarily doing it with wrong intention, but they're interested in creating this different form of currency without actually understanding the fundamentals of the currency and the system and the models that we have. And so the solutionism of using tech has quite often a dangerous element to it that can actually create more problems than we're seeking to solve, because there's a lack of understanding of the existing substrate, for example. But then also the piece that you mentioned there, and I love the way that you brought in Indra's net, because tech, it's hard to find the spiritual and the immeasurable, weightless, warm data, rich humanity experience in tech. You know, it's a very much a cold data, measurable sort of experience. Centropic world is very definitely oriented towards the relational and the invisible and the, you mentioned right at the very beginning, the liminal space. You know, it's very much weighted towards the gorgeousness that happens both in our inner dimension and in the relational dynamics of humans and humans and creatures and humans and nature and so on. And so it's from the way that you described that with the Indra's net. Well, anyway, no, maybe you could speak a little bit to the future is centropic of technology and the type of technology that you're working on that ensures that technology is a positive catalyst for humanity, as in people being deeply human, in distinction to tech continuing the separation of people from their humanity.
Yeah. There's a lot in that. It's really funny. You think about, you know, the mid 20th century when a lot of the writers, you know, sci-fi writers were writing about the human experience, that only the proliferation of technology over the coming decades or centuries would get us to. But they told the story from an inherently human perspective, because that was the perspective that we had. And then as we got into, you know, the late quarter and the end of the 20th century, so much sci-fi and so much writing ended up being about the amazement and the awe of the things that we don't have now as humans, that springs from the concept of this modern technology and how we would create these ways of entertaining and delighting and warfare and distraction and all these kinds of things. But the focus became more on the delta between what humanity was capable of and what technology, how far we can imagine technology and how it would help propel the story forward. And they're fascinating stories. But I think a part of that, because, you know, typically fictional stories in various forms tend to kind of shape how we continue to drive forward as, you know, as humanity. Think about 20th century sci-fi and how that influenced the last 30, 40 years of technology. There is a missing piece in that I think it's our responsibility to maintain. And a big part of that is that technology is inherently a part of our evolutionary process, which means that it is to a fair extent inherently human. It's, you know, Mother Nature builds these systems and then certain systems mutate and sometimes it wins and sometimes it loses, but she has ways of feeding those back. If we think about just the human condition over the last, you know, few tens of thousands of years, we've folded over a few times, and this is just another one of those folds. And that's, I think, something to be celebrated if we can think about all of these magnificent advances that we're making beyond the politics, beyond the money, beyond the, you know, the gripes and the turmoil, and beyond the notion of making more money or building more power or, you know, providing, you know, creating higher walls, to think about how this is an enhancement of what the possibility of the human experience is. And it's obviously replete with, you know, challenges and issues. And we're going to be dealing with that for, you know, for many, you know, years, decades, maybe even centuries to come, depending on if we, you know, if we transition into something else over the course of this century. But what's so important about tech, and I've spent the last 10 years, you know, embedded in with the big tech companies building teams and helping them evolve their products and learning about their new technology and figuring out how we could fold that back into products, that it got me thinking about how the existing system, this, you know, capitalist entropic system, really is about creating the next big thing that people will be interested in and be willing to tap or touch or click or pay or have something that's exciting for them to earn some attention and ultimately monetize, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it really does circumvent one of the most incredible things that we can do with this fusion of all of this new technology and how we relate it to humanity. And that's, how do we leverage it in a way that's more constructive and more pure in terms of how we can forge deeper connections or find, you know, new friends and new diverse opportunities and dig a little deeper, you know, both, you know, introspectively, but with the people that we're interested in, and learn more or more appropriately. There's so much that we can do with the technology that we have, but it's on us to both work against the system that, or at least, you know, swim with the currents of a system that is deeply entrenched, and figure out ways to innovate out of it, but also to think, you know, from a revolutionary standpoint, how would we remake this? Yeah. And the criteria by which we would remake it, I think from a centropic standpoint, is how does this create connection, opportunity, enhancement, all while building the good things and, you know, not leaving a wake of destruction in its tail.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, how do we build technology in service to life, which is inherently centropic? That's a piece of how we talk about centropic, in service to life versus in service to false idols or small idols or idols for personal gain and whatever else like that, which I think is an incredibly important question, because some of the technology that we have right now is able to be in the hands of people who have not very good intentions of how to use it. Unfortunately, it's definitely not in service to life. And so you raise a point which I find very fascinating, and I've probably not really considered it very much. Part of centropic world is we speak about we are nature, and nature has an operating system. Speaking of an operating system, has an operating system that it's been testing for about 14 billion years, and quite successfully, quite phenomenally successfully. I with my background in, I spent a lot of time in an anatomy lab doing dissection, and I remember as a student, I used to think about whatever the animating force of this now cadaver that is clearly not even associated with life on any level, where is it? What happens? Where does it go? And I'm pretty sure I'm not alone as a medical student going through that conversation. But the intricacies and the complexities of just human biology, if we just start with that, is mind-blowing. Now, we haven't even scratched the surface of that. We haven't... It's incomprehensible to us, even at this point in time, and that is a form of technology, that sort of nature's technology. And so my point is that this separation that we have, that nature is out there. You've just pointed out that technology is out there. Perhaps, no, that's a false premise. We are nature, not separate, and we are technology. A language is a technology. The tools to build a fire is a technology. So, you know, our expression is through a technological means. And so when we change our perspective around that and see it as central to our existence, just as without the natural world, we don't have an existence. Without each other, we don't have an existence. And so I would imagine that if we change that perspective and then, you know, from the centropic point of view, hold life as sacred decisions, the things that we're doing is towards the sacredness of life, in service to humanity, the future, which I'm not sure is possible for within our current Molochian sort of like behemoth capitalist greedy caterpillar eating all the leaves system that we have. But that's really the work that we're seeking to do. And from my point of view, deeply inspired by an intrinsic belief that most humans, given the right conditions and circumstances, want to do good things in the world and want to have their kids have a better life than they had. And I just hold that sort of as a central point, that even when you open the news feed and you look at the things going on, that which is mind-boggling, that underneath all of that, people, if they're given the right opportunity, I really believe this, you know, most people, if they're given the right opportunity, the right space, the right environment, will find the better angels of their nature. So anyway, that wasn't a question. I don't know whether you've got a comment to that.
I certainly can. I mean, you know, we haven't really had to hunt or gather or protect ourselves, or, you know, just procreate for, you know, solely to just keep the, you know, the species going, or at least your lineage going for a while. And, you know, I think the 20th century into the 21st century have really provided us with so many opportunities to live in our prefrontal cortex a little bit more than we had, you know, in prior centuries. And yeah, as you were talking about this, I think about the symbiosis between things. You had mentioned, you know, us as humanity being here and nature being over there, right? Or us as humanity and this machine, this thing that we're creating called technology, being as a separate piece. But really, you know, the exciting place is the liminal spaces in between, as I mentioned. And that's where there's inherently, it's not a distinct binary. There are the ebbs and flows of both components or multiple components, and that's an ever-changing prospect. And within that space, in my mind, it really does cultivate a sense of youthful exuberance, because you can't rely on standardized patterns, but you can see the patterns and the systems that evolve and move and shape within those spaces as they make their way toward the poles of any, you know, connective unit. And to me, I think that's where, you know, for myself, I'm firmly middle-aged, neither young nor old. The thing that I've really discovered over the last, you know, 5 or 10 years, where I've really transitioned into this recognition of where I am and closed a lot of doors to the person that I was, because I'll never be able to go back. That's really caused me to think about looking forward. And it almost exonerates you from having to carry like way too heavy a baggage as you go decade to decade. And I think a big part of that is not taking life too seriously, not getting lost in the prescriptive patterns that come with the systems that exist as they are, and recognizing that there are intrinsic freedoms that we have that have been afforded to us by virtue of the progress that we've made, that if we could shed a little light on, we could take advantage of and move ourselves out of the spaces that we are, out of, you know, either hardship or just rote and repeat life circumstances, or toward an aspiration that you never thought you'd have. And I think the parody to that is again, that youthful impulse of being able to see anything in this world as something that you have experienced, and it's imprinted on your brain on, you know, what it is and when you experience it and why it matters and how it relates to everything else, to being able to also see it with fresh eyes every time you see it and understand little subtleties and nuances that you may not have picked up before. I think it's entirely possible to see things in both ways. And that's kind of the essence of the beauty of building something that's centropic, and that you do have systems and frameworks, but the systems and frameworks really do allow this to, like, for the stability and the structure to do better and to be better and to forge deeper connections. And you can have both of those at the same time. It's just, it's a bit of a journey, and it gets a little harder as you get older. But I think that's just a holdover from what we built over the last couple hundred years to keep us as a species relatively contained.
Yeah, that's a nice thought. So, what do you feel about the future? Yeah, and we've kind of mentioned, and this has sort of been the thread through this, but how are you feeling about the future? And let me maybe go a little bit deeper in this question. What what are the key focus points or a sense of intention or purpose or direction that is important from your perspective if we are really going to create a more centropic world?
How do you feel about the future?
You know, just a little bit.
just a little thing, right?
Yeah.
I personally, the thing about the future is it's not an attainable thing, at least in this, you know, iteration of our species, and that, you know, if you at least believe in linear time, it's something that is unachievable, but can be as aspirational as you see fit, because it is something that eventually will become the present. And I mean, there's a reason that the word future is in the name of the company that I created, Future Theory. And the idea is to envision and aspire to something that doesn't yet exist now in the future. And the theory part is to be able to put that idea of the future into practice in the present, so that those sequential present moments that lead to that future ultimately manifest themselves and probably stick and move and bob and weave, but ultimately get towards something that is either, you know, on the point or similar to that future that you envisioned. And I think that that's a critical mindset, to be able to recognize that, you know, the past is always there to serve us in terms of, you know, collective experiences, what we've learned, and shape behaviors so that we can hopefully not get stuck in ruts and learn in terms of how we deal with the current present moment at any given time. But the past can only provide a part of how you behave in the present. The future is the other piece that, you know, whatever runway you have in front of you, that's a completely open-ended highway. And you can imagine what direction it goes in any way, shape, or form. And if you bring those two together, what you have are a collective pool of knowledge and the capacity to dream. And you can apply that to yourself in the moment. And I think that the concept of the future is the inherent collation of the future and the past as it relates to how you are firmly planted with 2 feet on the ground, looking in what direction you would consider forward, and dreaming of something that you want to make happen. And, you know, I think that that's a thing that it takes a little conditioning, or takes a little bit of breakage here and there, like mental breakage here and there when you get stuck. But I think the future is to me, as we get older, the future should become more bright and more interesting and more multifaceted by virtue of the experiences that we've had. And that to me seems to be antithetical to how people typically grow, you know, in age over the course of their lives. And I think that if we could flip that on its end, then we could attain more life, more vibrancy, more potential optimism, even through hard times, and more of that deep desire and impulse to do something for ourselves that ultimately can impact the world outside of us, be it the people that are close to us, or, you know, on a global level.
Yeah. Nice. In the Centropic Enterprise Masterclass, we finished, you may remember this, we finished week 8. We have a future exercise where I invite people to step into a future. I don't know whether you recall that, DJ, but I've facilitated hundreds of these different experiences for people now. And the sort of request is step into the future that your work today is creating, minimum of 18 months in the future, but up to 10 years. And then speak to us from that future of the experience that you have from the work you've done today. And including, what would you tell your present self? You know, what were the fears and the obstacles that you needed? And it could sound, you know, quite mystical or try. The power of that exercise is really quite phenomenal. I have had many tears, many just affirmations to self from the participants going through this experience. Things like, it's increased my level of confidence. It's given me the opportunity to really see how I need to be back in, which is today, you know, in order to create that. And so the sort of like the point in summary of that is that, because it's kind of what I heard you say as well, maybe is that our future is created by how we show up today and the intention that we hold for that. And it very, very powerful thing, that ability to hold that intention, made even more powerful, sort of weaving this all together, because we started off talking about technology. One of the things that I say is the greatest exponential technology available to us as humans in universe is human minds working together synergistically, which is when we create the ecology that enables the full agency, you mentioned this, the full agency of each individual to step into community, be that team, partnership, experiences with other people. And the ecology enables the collective outcome, collective creativity, collective intention holding to be infinitely greater than it could be held by any one person. And I really, really believe, because there's a technology to the creation of that type of teaming, which is what we work in a lot in Syntropic World. I really believe that bringing people together, coordinating people to really hold the intention for the future, the more beautiful world that I believe we all know is possible. It starts with today, but it really starts as well with creating those communities where synergy is common ground, where we feel our full agency and that we feel whole and able to contribute and be seen and participate without exploitation in this ecology where everyone is better for that experience. And what we're holding and creating is infinitely greater than we thought possible. And so that future-based experience gives people a taste of that as well. So I think that was how I was going to weave this all together as the sort of closing. Have you got any final comments to say?
That was really well said. I think that just the one thing in my head is the greatest, to your point in Syntropic, the greatest work that we can achieve is the work that we do together.
Yes.
And what's so important about where we are right now is that we have all of these means and mechanisms to connect with each other, but they're not, the floodgates aren't open. They're only letting a trickle through, and most of that's dopamine hits or, you know, immaterial content and, you know, no real critical path toward massive growth or learning or sharing. And at the end of the day, it all starts with us, right? So if we can turn the levers to open the doors to how we think about the future and how we act in the present and recognize that the catalyst is human connectivity, then it would make it easier for us to connect with other people and realize that thing that anybody that's worked in a team or in a group that they really, you know, loved and cared about knows, is that you don't just get the outcome of your work when you work with a group. You achieve a veritable rainbow of inspiration and learning, and it affects all facets of who you are, and it creates long-lasting relationships, and it opens doors to go deeper and deeper and deeper. I think the key that I'm working toward, at least in this space right now, is to figure out how to open the doors for an individual to recognize the connective tissue by opening themselves up to being more forward moving, thinking syntropically, thinking more constructively, and hopefully maybe dropping a couple of barriers and reaching out and experiencing that exponential power of human connection.
Yeah. No, really beautiful. Well, thank you so much for being a part of Syntropic World. And I'm delighted that you are going to be a part of the future of Syntropic World. How do people find out more about you?
You can find me at djcarry.com. There's a sign up there, and I'll be launching Future Theory very soon. And on social media, it's at djcarry, DEEJCAREY, across pretty much any social media. You can reach me on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, you name it.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you so much, DJ. It's always a pleasure hanging out with you.
Likewise, Christine. It's been a lot of fun.
Okay, thank you. This episode is produced by Foundation Nova Diem. We thank them for their wonderful production. If you are curious to learn more about Syntropic World, then please visit syntropic.world and sign up for our weekly Sunday Syntropy, where you will receive articles, tools, and resources to support your Syntropic journey. You can also find us on all the socials at Syntropic World. We love questions. Please ask. You can email us at hello@syntropic.world. Let's leave everything better and be Syntropic. Thank you for listening.